So we've been talking about living big. We've been talking about how God is calling us to expanding areas of influence in our lives. When I was at Catalyst almost a year ago now, Andy Stanley asked us this question. A question that I have typed up on a little 3x5 note card that I keep in my stack of 3x5 note cards with things that I can't forget. For me to look back upon from time to time and hear this challenge again. And Andy asked us this question. What you doing big? And it's a question that has challenged me over the course of the last year, and I want to ask you, what you doing big? We serve a big God, and He calls us to big things, so what you doing big? We've been talking about living big over the last month, and I want to know, don't tell me, but I would like to know, where in your life have you been impressed to do something beyond what you've already been doing for God? Where have you felt God challenging you to expand your life in your home, in your family, in your business, in your ministry, in your relationships, or even maybe pulling you outside of yourself to do something big that impacts the other side of the world? It might be right here. It might be way over there. What's God been impressing on your heart to do for Him? Joshua 1, verse 9, God speaking to Moses, or God speaking to Joshua, and through him to us, have I not commanded you? Am I not the one who called you to live big? Am I not the one who put the dream in your life? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Randy Cox is going to come and share with us his story on his journey of a dream that God placed in his life and the journey that put him on to actually go and do something about that dream. Randy, come and talk to us about what living big looked like in your life for a while.
Good morning. Sometimes God gives you dreams. And sometimes they're kind of outlandish. Well, Pat invited me here this morning to share with you a dream that God gave me a long time ago and to describe the process that God used to turn that dream into a reality in my life. The story starts back in the fall of 1992 when I was a freshman at college. I was going to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, and I was going to study aviation computer science. I had my sights set on a job in the aerospace industry, working in the maybe with the space program. But in English class one day, my professor posed this question to the students. She said, "Why are you here? Why are you not off chasing your dream instead of sitting here in my class?" Her example was maybe we would rather be diving for treasure in the Gulf of Mexico. That was her example. And as I thought, as I sat in the class and I wondered about this question, I realized I didn't really have a dream like that. So what would I do? It would have to be something pretty exciting. Maybe something even a little dangerous. Smuggling came to mind. But I quickly dismissed it because you smuggle guns and drugs and nothing good comes from that. But then I had a thought that popped into my head, almost like it flew in through the window and lodged itself in my brain, and it was this: smuggle Bibles into China. It kind of took me off guard. I didn't really know anything about China. I didn't know if anybody actually smuggled Bibles into China. But the thought was so intriguing that I wrote it on my notebook, and I decided that I would write my semester term paper on that topic. That afternoon, I went to the library on campus, and I found article after article about the persecuted church in China. And I learned that that Christians who worship in unregistered churches are routinely arrested, imprisoned, beaten, sometimes even killed for their faith. And I learned that even though the government allowed the printing of about 2 million Bibles a year, that wasn't nearly enough even to give one new Bible to every new Christian every year in China, let alone all the people who had their Bibles destroyed in the Cultural Revolution. So I learned that actually people did smuggle Bibles into China. And the thought kind of consumed me. It got to the point where I was thinking about it every day, at some point during the day. Eventually, it seemed like every hour of every day, I would be reminded of this crazy idea. And before long, it really did become a dream of mine. And I decided that, okay, if this is what you want me to do, God, I'll do it. But I really didn't feel prepared. I didn't feel like I had a good enough education, or, you know, I didn't know enough about China. I didn't know enough about the Bible. So what I decided to do is I was going to transfer to Anderson University and become a Christian ministry major there. It's actually where I met Pat for the first time. The second semester of my freshman year, I can narrow it down into about, I'm going to say the first week of January, freshman year, was new student orientation, and I met Pat there. And to hear him tell the story, I introduced myself, "Hi, I'm Randy Cox, and I'm going to smuggle Bibles into China." I don't remember it happening quite that way, but I'm not going to say that it's an impossible thing. It might have. I just don't remember. But I spent the next few years in ministry classes and in Bible classes, and I started studying missions. And I got to tell you, it was some of the worst years of my college experience, because I had such a hard time in those classes. And I tried so hard, but finally I realized that my mind just wasn't wired the way it needed to be wired to be a successful Christian ministry major. I had more of a computer science wired brain, right? But I didn't feel like I could leave that. I felt like if I did, I'd be running away from something that God had called me to. And I prayed about it a lot. And Pat and my small group that we were in prayed for me. And eventually, I think it was probably in early in the fall of 94, I woke up one Sunday morning to get ready to go to church, and I felt a peace that I hadn't felt in a long time. I felt like God was saying to me, "You know, Randy, it's okay if you're not a Christian ministry major. You can be a computer science major." See, I had planned to enter full-time missions, and when my overseas missions task was done, then maybe I would come back and I would be a pastor here. But God said to me, "You know, I just gave you this one little job to do, but you added all the rest of that stuff. So go, it's okay." And with great joy, the next morning, Monday morning, I switched my major, and I dropped all my ministry classes, and I got back into computer science. And I was far more successful, I was far happier, and eventually I transferred to Taylor University to finish my degree. And then I got married, and after I was finished at Taylor, my wife and I moved to Indianapolis, where my first job was. We had a couple kids. We bought a house. And years passed, and I didn't think about China quite as much as I used to. I never went too long without a reminder, be it maybe a television show I saw or an article I would read about China and the church. Or actually, one of the most persistent reminders I had was when we would take communion at church. At Embry-Riddle, my friends and I went to a Christian church where they take communion every single week. And since this dream of going to China was the foremost thing on my mind, at the time, the two kind of got linked together in my head. So now, ever since then, when I take communion, no matter where I am, I thank Christ for his sacrifice for me, but I also remember that his sacrifice is for everyone, even my friends in China, even if they haven't even yet heard his name. So, life was good. I was living life. And, like I said, not thinking about China quite so much anymore. It was always sort of something that I would do someday. Until in the spring of 2003, our church got a new pastor. His name is Steve Renick. And one morning, shortly after he started at our church, I go to the Church of the Crossing in Indianapolis, by the way. I invited myself out to breakfast with him, just to get to know him a little better. And we were just chatting and talking about our college experience. And I told him that I'd gone to 3 universities. And I admitted that at one time I was a Christian ministry major. And I found myself telling him this story that I've just shared with you guys. And I realized that it had been about 10 and a half years since that English class. And in fact, it had been 5 or 6 years, I think, since I'd told anybody that story. And it kind of, it started to get to me again. God started poking me. And I almost felt like I was back at Embry-Riddle again. Every single day, I would think about it. Eventually, every hour, I would think about it. And I felt like God was telling me, now's the time. It's time to go. And I said, okay. It seemed like just the worst time because we're a one-income family. My wife stays home with our 2 kids. We had a mortgage, and I worked in a job that essentially gave me 2 weeks off every year. It didn't seem to really make sense, but I really felt like God was telling me that it was the time. So I started making plans. I contacted an organization called Open Doors, which is an organization that has served the persecuted church in many ways for the past 50 years. 50 years this year. It's their anniversary. And I learned that they take trips into China just about every day of the year. Bible courier trips, they call it. And regular Joe like me can sign up and go for a week or, you know, however much time. And so I sent my application, and they accepted me. But I wasn't feeling as much support from my wife as I thought I would. And I talked to her about it one evening and said, you know, Jen, what do you think about when I bring up this trip? And you know what she said? Oh, no, not this again. She hadn't lived with the dream. She'd known about it, but it wasn't her dream. And but I found out that the real problem was that I was planning this trip, when really this was going to be something that, even though I was the one that was going, she probably had the harder job. I was asking her to do the most inconvenient thing I've ever asked her to do, to stay home 2 weeks by herself with our 2 kids. And I had to apologize to her for it, and she was right. This was, I was making all the plans, and so. I did. I apologized to her, and from then on, I was very intentional about making sure that we were planning this together, and that this was something that we were doing together. And I prayed for her a lot, and she ended up being my biggest supporter. And here's an example of how supportive she was. In October of 2003, we were chatting one evening, and she said, "Randy, I know that you're planning on taking this trip in June or July next year, but I think you ought to move it up just a little bit." I So really, why is that? Because she was pregnant with our third child. A baby who was due to be born in July when I was planning on going. So what she was telling me is she'd rather me go in May. Don't go when I'm 8 months pregnant. Go when I'm 7 months pregnant. I told her, listen, if you don't want me to go, I won't. I can do it some other time. No. She still backed me up. She wanted me to go just a little bit earlier. And that was great. So I had the support of my wife and of my friends at church, but we didn't really know how we were going to pay for it. Right from the beginning, we knew that we didn't have really any money that we could put toward it. We was going to have to raise everything. So I talked to a guy at my church. His name is Russ Jones. And Russ has devoted himself, his life, to taking missions trips. He takes several a year. I think at last count it's something like, I don't know, 60 trips he's gone on. Usually to Central America or South America or sometimes Africa to build things. He's a builder. And I asked him for advice. How should I raise this money? And he said, Randy, what you got to do is pray about it a lot and tell everybody you know about this trip that you're planning. In all the years that he's been taking trips, he gave the same advice to everybody who said they wanted to go with him but weren't sure how they were going to pay for it. He said, God has all the money. And if you really want to go, and if God wants you to go, ask him for it, and he'll give it to you. And so the way I raised the money was sort of a faith experiment. I don't necessarily recommend that this is the best way to raise money for a missions trip, but this is what I did. I, aside from my immediate family, who I asked that Christmas, instead of Christmas presents, to give me money for my China, aside from that, I didn't ask anybody to donate to my trip, but I told a lot of people that I was going to go. And people just started coming up to me and saying, Randy, I heard you were going to China. That's great. How can I help you to pay for it? And so people started sending money to me. Right when I needed it, usually. When the time came that I really needed to get my passport, I didn't quite have enough money for it yet. And I went to church, and a guy said, hey, how much more do you need to get your passport? And I told him, and he covered it. And when the time came that I really needed to get my airline ticket, a couple actually who had already given me money for my trip said, how much more do you need for your airline ticket? And I told them, and they covered it. And it was the way it worked all the way until the very end. The week before I left for my trip, people were still giving me money. From the very beginning of this faith experiment, I decided that that I would give a tithe of everything I collected to the Church of God in Hong Kong. So I collected enough for my trip. I collected, you know, and this tithe. And at the end of the trip, I still had a good portion left over that I gave to the Open Doors folks in Asia. And in fact, when I came home from the trip, we checked our credit card statement, and there was a $50 charge in there that I just completely forgotten about. And that week, a friend contacted me and said, Randy, we meant to give you this before you left on your trip, but we forgot. So here's $50. I hope that you can somehow find it useful. And after that, there was no more money. So I had the support from my family and friends. I had Open Doors had accepted me. I had the money. And on May 14th of 2004, I hopped on a plane in Chicago and flew to Hong Kong. And I got to tell you, this was the fulfillment of a dream of a third of my life, really. And to finally see that God brought me there, it was amazing. I was met at the airport by Patrick Nachtigall, who, with his wife Jamie, they're missionaries who served the Church of God the Hong Kong Church of God. Hong Kong Church of God is the only Church of God congregation in China. Technically, Hong Kong is part of China, but it's a special administrative region, so they're much more free to worship, and missionaries can go there, and there's churches all over. And I got to spend a great weekend with them. I got to go to their church, which is absolutely the most vibrant, passionate church I've ever seen. It's made up of almost entirely people who are aged 30 and under, and they don't have a youth group because all their youth are serving right next to everybody else. The church is focused really on small groups, and there are 12, 13-year-old girls that are leading small groups, and they're bringing their friends, and it's really an amazing place. I wish I could have more time to tell you about it, but then on Monday, I traveled to Open Doors Asian base of operations. Open Doors, after you take a trip with them, they encourage you to share about your trip, but there's a couple things that they would rather you not disclose, like their base of operations in Asia and the specific cities you visit and things like that. So suffice to say, I traveled there and I met a group of people who had come from all over the world to do the same thing that I was there to do. I met three people from Holland, a woman from France, a man from Great Britain, and a girl from Colorado, and then me. Regular Joes, but people who God had given the exact same dream that I had. And for the first time in my life, I could talk to people who completely and totally understood the passion and the dream that God had given me because they felt exactly the same way. Over the next 2 weeks, I traveled with them and with another group the second week, and I crossed the border 5 times, each time carrying a backpack full of materials. Could be Bibles or Sunday school stuff or kids' books or music things. And really, to call it smuggling is sort of a romantic notion, I guess, because really it's just a matter of going through customs, and the borders are just usually so busy that not everybody can put their stuff on the x-ray machines anyway. So you walk past and pray that the guard doesn't stop you and have you come back and x-ray your bags. That's really all there is to it. We didn't do anything particularly sneaky. We just trusted God to help us get through without being stopped. If you are stopped, it's not really a terribly huge deal for a foreigner because they'll give you a receipt and they'll tell you that you can pick up your bag on the way back out of the country. If you're Chinese, it'd be a little different, I think. But for a foreigner, it was really not a big deal. The first time I crossed the border was to go visit a man in Guangzhou named Pastor Samuel Lam, who I talked about a little bit in the Sunday school hour. He's the pastor of a church in Guangzhou that's unregistered. Back in the late 50s and all through the 60s and 70s, he was in prison in labor camp, essentially, for 20 years. And he was arrested for refusing to go along with the registered state church. And now he's so well known around the world that the police pretty much leave him alone. He's had representatives from President Reagan visit him. Billy Graham's visited him. Lots of other notable people have visited him. So he's so well known that in order to not cause an international incident, they don't arrest him. They hassle him a lot. They would go in and arrest him and interrogate him for a couple days and let him go, but they haven't imprisoned him. At the time that I was there, he hadn't had any problems with the police for about 6 years. And then I learned after I came back that 2 weeks after I came back, they'd arrested him again, and interrogated him for a couple of days and let him go. But we delivered all this stuff to him because people come from all over China to get Bibles from him and take them back. And he sat down and he told us his story for half an hour. And he was so full of joy, even in the face of losing 20 years of his life in a prison mine and being hassled by the police all the time. And this was the most joyful man I've ever met. And in the course of a week, his church has about a dozen services, and about 3,000 people come through his doors to worship every week in Guangzhou, where it's illegal to worship in an unregistered church. Pastor Lim's getting old, and they're wondering, the Open Doors folks are wondering what's really going to happen to that church once he's gone. They operate so openly now that once Pastor Lam is gone, it might be trouble for that church. So you can remember them in prayer. Twice we flew into cities in China, and the operation was pretty much the same both times. We would have one suitcase with our personal stuff and one suitcase full of materials. And both times that we flew in, we arrived. It was the last plane of the evening. Practically, it was night, and the procedure was the same. We would take all of our personal stuff and put it on one cart, one trolley, as the Dutch people called it, on one trolley. Take our bags of Bibles, put them on the other trolley. And the one particular time, we had two carts full of materials, and with my group, we pushed it out to the front where the sidewalk, where everybody drops off and picks up their friends, and we decided that most of the group should go ahead and stay on one end of the sidewalk, and then two of us each took one cart and we pushed it down the sidewalk, looking for the man who was to meet us. And they were overflowing with bags, and one of my bags fell off, and I leaned down and picked up and put it back on my cart. And as I did so, there was a Chinese man pushing my cart. And he pushed it over to this this little black sedan, maybe a Jetta or something like that, a little four-door black car. And he had two helpers with him. So we frantically threw everything into his trunk, filled it up. You couldn't get another slip of paper in that trunk. And then we filled up the floor in the back seat, and then all the way up to the level of the windows, it was filled from the back seat all the way up to the back of the front seat. And we just left this little area for one of his helpers to sit. It was awesome. And he was thrilled at receiving that much. And he and his helpers, with great smiles, shook our hands, and my friend and I rushed back down the sidewalk to meet our group. And we said, "You gotta watch for this black car with the stuff that's filled up to the windows." And as they drove by, the guy in the back seat rolled his window down and stuck his hand out a little bit and waved at us. And we all waved at him. And off they drove into the night. And that was it. We don't know where those Bibles and books ended up. We don't know his name. He didn't know our name. He didn't know who we worked for. All he knew was that if he was there at that spot, at that particular time, that a bunch of Westerners would show up and would bring him the Word of God. So I've wondered, looking back on this trip, why did God give me this particular dream? Why did he have to be so dramatic, I guess, in the idea? Why he could have said, "Randy, I want you to have a heart for the Chinese people and to find a way to serve them." But instead, he asked me this pretty dramatic question, or this gave me this idea: smuggle Bibles into China. And why? And I've come up with a few answers. The first is, I was barely 18 years old at the time, and my international travel experience involved an eighth grade trip to Niagara Falls. So this really got my attention in a way that, you know, something, a different idea might not have. But it captured my imagination, and you know, it caught me, and I couldn't ignore it. But then, why did it have to be something that was such a challenge for me? You know, being just the wrong time, and having no money. And I think that he did that because he wanted to teach me and my wife to trust him, and to believe that he was going to take care of us and he would provide for us. And also it gave me a confidence that I didn't have before. If you would have asked me 2 years ago to come here and speak, I would have told you were nuts. But having gone through this whole thing and see how God worked and helped me along the way, like I said, a regular Joe who don't feel like I have anything particularly special to offer, but he used me in a way that I'd never expected. So now I'm far more involved in my church, in things that I wouldn't have felt comfortable before. And you know, if I don't ever smuggle another Bible into China, that'd be fine with me. I think I'd enjoy doing it again. But now I've got a heart for the Chinese people, and I'm excited to find new ways to serve him. The timing that seemed so crummy, looking back on it now, I can see that it was perfect. Because, you know, I traveled in 2004, and I knew I couldn't go back in 2005, but I thought maybe I could get back there in 2006. And so my pastor, my missions pastor and I were planning a trip in January and February of 2006 when we got an email from John Johnson, who is the area coordinator, I think, for Asia, for all the Church of God missions in Asia. And he's setting up a conference in Taipei at the end of January of 2006 called Heart for China. And the idea is to bring in people from all around the world to pray, and it's a 10-day conference to focus on what the Church of God's strategy is for reaching China. And I'm so excited that I get to go to that, and I get to contribute to that. And you know, if I would have waited another year or two to take that trip to China, I wouldn't be going to this Heart for China thing. And the timing, it worked out great. So, could you guys pray with me? God, thank you for giving us dreams. Thank you for giving us crazy, outlandish dreams. And thank you most of all for pestering us about them until we allow you to turn those dreams into reality. Amen.
Stay for a second, buddy.
I'm sitting there listening to you tell this story again.
Right.
Like, I didn't hear the first part of the story enough.
Yeah.
The years we lived together. But I've heard him tell this story one other time, and I said, you've got to come tell this at our church. And I'm sitting there in my seat, and I'm crying. Not because God's ever told me to go to China, but because with every fiber of my being, I want my life to be about spreading the word of God to people who need to hear it. Wherever that is, it starts right here. And maybe it's in China. And thank you for challenging us to allow God to use us in that way. Randy's as regular a guy as they get.
Thanks.
That's a compliment.
Oh.
And I know most of you guys, and it's so easy for us to think we are too normal for God to use us to change the world. And when we are willing to allow to step out and serve God in very normal ways, God uses our willingness
to work through us and change the world. What's you doing big? What's the dream God's put on your heart? Our God is big, he's awesome, he's mighty, and he can fuel our big dreams. God gives us the dream, he gives us the resources to make the dreams happen. We just have to be the people who say, yes, I'll do it.